Welcome to Another Day Above Ground, a show for, by, and about baby boomers. It's the podcast for people who have no idea how to download a podcast. And now, here's your host, Dale Irvin.
Well, welcome back, my baby boomer friends. It is time once again for another day above ground. And we're going to, we have a theme this week, and it is Let the Good Times Roll. The noise you hear in the background is coming live out of New Orleans for because it's the day before Mardi Gras Day. But before I get any further, let me introduce my partners on this episode. First, from the state of Indiana, where it's always Mardi Gras. It's, where's our guest standing in a train tunnel? Anyhow, from Indiana, the Aristotle of comedy, Mr. Tim Slagle.
Hey, I've just been told that several universities will not be able to allow tomorrow to be referred to as Fat Tuesday because it's calendar shaming.
Very nice. And joining us from Denver, Colorado, where she claims it's cold again once again today, is Carolyn Strauss.
Hey, everybody. And I was going to make a Fat Tuesday joke, but I'm not. But I had a conversation last night with some friends, and it's 54 days since New Year's resolutions happened. Isn't that what Mardi Gras is about? It's like the day that you really finally just say, ah, screw it. And all the New Year's resolutions go away.
No, it's actually the reset. It's actually, okay, this time tomorrow for sure.
Oh, yeah. How's that working for you?
Well, that one only has to last 40 days, so it's much easier than a New Year's resolution is for your whole life.
New Year's resolution means going to the gym. That just means giving up candy bars. Anyhow, we decided that we're recording this the day before Mardi Gras, also known as Shrove Tuesday or Fat Tuesday, and we got an expert to guide us through exactly what Mardi Gras is like in the city of New Orleans. Please welcome our special guest, Mr. Jared Broad.
You know, the name is Bro, Dale. It's just Bro, B-R-A-U-D. But Jared was right. Hi,
bro.
Kids.
Good to years see I've been you. Calling you a broad. All right, I'm very sorry about that.
And I've been there's calling a story him a about bro, that. So one that's, of us is right.
That's gender shaming. I'm
so,
very
so
sorry.
Audience, you can just use yo bro, and I answer to that. We were doing that before. That was actually a cool thing.
And he's standing, I think, right in the proximity of Bourbon Street as we speak, which is hence where all the action is coming from. Are you eating a beignet as we talk?
You know, unfortunately, I'm not eating a beignet. I'm at my hotel above the fray for the moment. I've been down here for 3 days now. I just check into a hotel, even though I'm a local, and that way I can just stagger to and from events as necessary. Dale actually came down here with Larry Wingate and John Dolan a few years back. So I know you've had them on as guests.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to see Dale on Bourbon Street in a kilt. Very, very fascinating experience. And
I was wondering where he got all those beads.
So
I'm wondering if the evening started with him in a kilt or it progressed to a kilt.
Let me start this off from the beginning. Jared is with the crew of the Mid-Cities, and the different crews are the ones that build the floats and do the parades and such. And with Jared's crew, 2 days before the parade, or is it a day before the parade? They have the what do you call it? The tuxedo
stroll? The day before we have the gentleman's top hat, tails, and cigar stroll. It's an epic journey where we meet our ladies for brunch. They give us a big kiss off at the end of the brunch, put lipstick all over us, and then they send us into the canyons of Bourbon Street for hand-to-hand combat as we bestow beads upon the bead-worthy with our own jazz band walking down the street. It's quite a festive afternoon.
It's like a little mini parade of all these guys dressed in tuxedos and top hats and stuff.
Yeah, it's known as a second line parade. You know, when you have your band and you're following behind your band, it's known as a second line. And it's just more hour than any human can have, more fun than any human can have in 3 hours.
That to me is a dream I had once. And all these men in tuxedos walking
marching
down the street.
You?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I know a little bit about New Orleans culture, but not a lot. You said that that's a second line parade. I've also heard of first line parades. What's the difference?
Well, a first line would be the people who stay. So a second line, let's go back to the history of the whole jazz bands. When someone dies, there is the period of mourning followed by the period of celebration. So the jazz brass bands would play a dirge type song to the cemetery. You would bury your loved one. And then the band strikes up these glorious jazz tunes because now they're off to heaven and gone to eternal happiness. And the family and the band leader, or the first line, everyone who stands behind is the second line. Think of all the people who hear the parade coming by, who come out of their houses to participate. They're the second liners, first liners of the family.
Okay.
There we go. Definition 101. Let me give you an idea of what the weekend was like, just so that we can recap and add perspective. So Dale came down here and we did the whole 3-day routine with him. You start Friday afternoon with a beer on a balcony so you can throw some beads from the balcony. We've all seen girls on Bourbon Street who are intoxicated and just feel a need to do it. Carolyn just did. And while we do not condone this at all, we also reward it. and then that night we take our beautiful ladies to a formal dinner with formal dresses. There is a man who is personifying the king of the organization. There's a queen, there are maids, there are dukes. I mean, there's a whole lot of regalia and costuming that goes on. A full 90-minute presentation of all of these people. And it's just very traditional the way it's been done for nearly 200 years. And then we dance till 3 in the morning and have dinner. And it's just a crazy long night. And then the second day, Saturday, we get up, we do the gentleman's top hat, tails, and cigar stroll. Who knows when anyone gets home, if they ever get home. 8 o'clock on Sunday morning, there's mass because most of us are Catholics. And then at 8:30, we start drinking our Bloody Marys and our champagne and whatnot. And then we have a party till about 10:30. Then we put 200 people on buses and we take them down to a parade. And then we actually get onto these parade floats that we pay someone to decorate for us. And then you throw beads to complete strangers on a 60-block route through the city. So New Orleans, most people only think of that Bourbon Street experience where it's 6 blocks of co-eds wanting to display their tatas. Whereas for the locals, it's really the 60-block parade route where it's moms and dads and kids and grandparents. And, you know, you'll see kids from 6 days old to, you know, 96 all along the parade route, waving, throw me something, mister, and catching beads. And you throw, I know in my experience, I throw about 5,000 beads to people over a 3-hour period. And each one leaves my hand with a smile and a kiss. And I make eye contact with each person so I know that I can put 5,000 smiles on 5,000 faces in 3 hours. That's kind of friggin' cool. And I can spend about $2,000 to do it.
So there's none of that display going on in the family event?
No, not really. Think of it more like a nice tailgate party about 10 in the morning till 10 at night.
I've been down for Mardi Gras. So I have seen it, but it's just so synonymous with the event now. That it,
you know, it is, but I'll be honest with you, it didn't really start happening like that until the late 80s, early 90s. And I remember when it would happen. I used to be a TV reporter at our NBC affiliate, WDSU, and we used to have a secret videotape called Tits on Six. And on that tape, each photographer might bring back like one or two flashes during the course of the day, and we might have a dozen by the end of the day. And then MTV came down here and they did a live broadcast. And when MTV did it, that it just blew up crazy stupid, and it became synonymous, and people thought it was something they had to do. And if you think you have to do it, by all means, make yourself happy. I'm here to facilitate.
It's actually facilitate. It's actually also synonymous with the city. I mean, it doesn't. Mardi Gras doesn't even isn't even within the containment of the 2 weeks in New Orleans anymore, is it?
You know, the displaying of the tatas and the throwing of the beads happens all year long. Hmm. You can pay $150 to the city and get a permit to have your own second line. Every time somebody's got a bachelorette party, every time somebody's got a wedding or whatever convention gets together, yeah, everybody's going to be up on a balcony somewhere throwing beads, and someone will feel obligated to participate and reciprocate. So it's kind of what goes on. It just kind of took on a life of its own. There was never a city ordinance that said you must show. It's right. Just something that has happened over the years.
I have a question. I did. It totally left my head. This is the joy of being a boomer. Yes. I got it. You mentioned that you go to church. How do you get all those people into that little confession thing? And how long does that take? Yeah. Like a clown car of confessions.
Yeah. It's just, we just do the go forth and don't get caught sinning like this no more, my son.
Don't get caught. Let me just say two things about my Mardi Gras experience. First of all, the actual being on the float and throwing these beads to perfect strangers for 60 blocks, to me, was like pitching 3 innings of heavy relief. I had to go back, ice my arm down, throwing all these things. Yeah. And you don't know it at the time because in one hand you got beads, in the other hand you got a beverage. And you really don't feel any of the pain at the time.
You're true. You're right. You know, it's true. This morning it's like I am hurting. I am taking ibuprofen left and right. My liver keeps trying to escape.
and then with the top hat stroll, that was cool. And yes, I did wear my kilt and my tuxedo jacket and everything. And Larry Winget wore a tuxedo, but he had these real fancy $1 million cowboy boots on. And one of the guys in your crew came up to me and he said, "I've been in this crew for 35 years. Between your kilt and your buddy's boots, I've never seen so many titties."
I have a question. I have a food question. Is there special food that happens around Mardi Gras? I mean, I remember, Jared, when I saw you around Christmas time and I had that Kringle thing, which might be the best thing I ever ate. It's like coffee.
It was like
cake
a king
steroids.
Cake. Yes. Yeah. It's called king cake.
It was ridiculously phenomenal when you and I had that when I was down there working and we got together. But is there food for Mardi Gras that we should be eating tomorrow?
Not really. King cake starts on January 6th, is the Feast of the Epiphany, when biblically the Magi found the baby Jesus, and it's known as King's Day or the Feast of the Epiphany or the 12th night of Christmas. So we're going to put all of these into one day, January 6th, and that's when you can start buying these king cakes. And inside this, so it's an oval-shaped cake filled with cinnamon. Some people now like to put fillings, cream cheese, whatever in it. I'm a traditionalist. I'm just cinnamon. And it's got purple, green, and gold sugar sprinkles on it because those are the 3 colors of Mardi Gras. And there's a little baby doll hidden inside that's supposed to represent the baby Jesus. And if you get the doll, then you have to buy the next cake for the next party the next day. So there's a lot of weight gain and consumption of carbohydrates and sugars for that period between January 6th and Ash Wednesday. But that's really the only assigned food. In New Orleans, there's so much good food. We just eat it all the time. And, and each family has something traditional. Like, if I think Mardi Gras Day, I want my mom's chicken salad sandwiches on white bread. That's what she would make for us to take to the parades. But other families, are out there barbecuing and fried chicken. Some people are going to go get a whole bunch of a crawfish and boil crawfish along the parade route. It is really rough when you're on the float because there are all these aromas of people cooking along the parade route, and it's like, oh, please, I will give you all these beads for those crawfish. I've done it before.
I think the reason why Carolyn was asking is Dale and I were talking about something that if you're from the Chicago area or any place where there's a huge Polish neighborhood, we have punchkis. that we celebrate. Mm. We celebrate, yes, Fat Tuesday with.
Have you had a punchki? Derek, ever had a punchki? It's a big jelly donut, but the dough is much chewier than a regular donut.
It's a huge jelly donut. They weigh about 5 pounds.
We should be eating these today. I should have sent you guys king cakes, and you should have sent me a jelly donut.
Yeah, well, it's actually called, it's pronounced punchki, but it's spelled, if you can't Google it because it's spelled like an eye chart.
Because it's Polish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, there's so did anybody call their little kids my little punchki? That's so cute.
Yeah, isn't that? It's a punchki or a guamki is another one. That's the stuffed cabbage.
We weren't
kids.
Polish, so we named my little brother Jelly Donut. Yes.
I think there was a Kennedy called that. That was the one that was in Wisconsin that you never heard about.
So I don't think you can get these punchkis anywhere else in the country, because being from the Northeast and spending all those years in New York, I never heard of it before.
Huh.
Well, that's you're in bagel country. That's all they make up there is bagels.
Thank God for bagels. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They took, yeah, which is essentially a punchki where someone stole the jelly.
And made it really cheap. But yeah, Mardi Gras, I guess, is a, for lack of anything, I mean, it's a celebration going into Lent when on Shrove Tuesday or Mardi Gras Day. Supposed to eat and drink as much as you can because you're giving it all up, wink, wink, the next day.
Exactly.
It's a celebration, you know, of life, but you have experienced the other side of that. You have really experienced what it's like to be another day above ground.
Back in 2004, it was actually a week after Mardi Gras, I was in the warehouse where we keep all the floats. And we were cleaning all of the junk off the float, you know, leftover bags and boxes that all the beads come in, and drinking beer at 10:30 in the morning, as one would do. And we were having a burping contest among the gentlemen who were participating. And I had saved up this killer burp. And when I went to burp, it did not happen. And I got this sharp pain in my right side, and I went, wow, that's weird. That wasn't normal. I had a great burp that was about ready to come out. And what had happened is within your intestines, there are, I'm going to say sphincter, okay? So don't laugh, Dale.
Just don't say butthole. Sphincters. That would be awkward.
Yeah. So throughout your intestines, there are little valves that open and close. And so that lets you keep food in between the three sections of your small intestine as we go here to medical school. And that happens before it goes into your colon. Well, my little valve died at that moment, and I started dying in the process. So like anybody else, I finished my beer, got in the car, and started driving home. And my house is on the other side of Lake Pontchartrain, and to get there, you have to drive across the world's longest bridge. Now, I wasn't driving intoxicated. I had only had the one beer and couldn't finish burping that one out, so it doesn't even count. If you don't burp, the beer doesn't count. And that's state law in Louisiana. If an officer had pulled me over, I could have said, but sir, yes, there's alcohol in my breath, but I was not able to burp, and I would have been able to go. So like all males, we go into denial mode, and I went, yeah, that doesn't feel good. I guess I should get on the world's longest bridge and start driving home. So I did. And about 3 miles out, I knew something wasn't right. I was getting tingling in the tips of my fingers and getting a little nauseous. I pulled over a police officer. There's an emergency handle you can pull, and a cop will actually come upon request. And I said, yeah, I wasn't feeling right, but I'm feeling okay now. He says, well, let me follow you. So we drive 3 miles down the bridge. I'm now 6 miles out, really starting to lose feeling in my toes, convince myself I'm good to go another 3 miles. We get 9 miles out on the bridge, and things are just starting to shut down. Basically, what's happening is my insides are dying because I got a blood clot that there's this big like vein like a spider that feeds all your intestines. It's called the mesenteric artery, and mine is clogged up. And I'm dying pretty quickly. So about halfway across the bridge, I get out of the car. I can hardly stand up. And I tell this cop, look, I'm going to have to crawl in your back seat and I'm going to need you to take me to the hospital. He goes, sir, I wish I could, but that's against regulations. I will call an ambulance. They'll come out here and pick you up. And I'm going like, well, look, I'm doing the back timing here. It's 20 minutes for the ambulance to get here, 20 minutes to get back. I'm losing 20 minutes of life here. What if I got in my car and I drove 90 miles an hour and you chased me with your lights on? And when we get off the bridge in 10 minutes, because if I drive really fast, I can get off the bridge, you just write me a ticket as I'm going into the ambulance. You just call the ambulance, have them meet us at the toll plaza on the other side. So that's what we did. He did not write me the ticket, but it was rather hilarious that this cop agreed that it was not against regulations for me to drive 90 miles an hour to get off the bridge.
I can speed. I can't give you a lift.
So I called my wife as I was crossing the bridge, and I went, look, baby, I'm not feeling right. I have an ambulance going to meet me on the other side of the Causeway Bridge. You might want to meet me there, and we're going to go to the hospital. And she thought, oh, what's wrong with him? Appendicitis, maybe a kidney stone, who knows what. And next thing I know, I laid in a hospital for 48 hours on just the worst morphine drip and worst hallucinations and worst pain possible. They couldn't diagnose what was wrong to me. Monday morning, they opened me up, and it's gray on the inside. So, yeah, I nearly checked out. I coded a couple of times. I was in ICU for, I think, 15 days, 21 wow. days in the hospital. So when I do Mardi Gras, it is always like my favorite time of the year. It's the truly, yep, another day above ground, kids, because, you know, they took the intestines out and gave me this lovely little ostomy bag, which we'll have to do a special ostomy episode on St. Ostomy's Day. we can revisit that one. It's kind of a shitty holiday, but you would appreciate it. You have no idea what it's like until you have this little piece of your gut sticking through the side of your body. And like, if you eat green beans, you can watch the green beans come out and you go, wow, that is amazing. Salad will come out faster than meat. You'd learn a lot about your digestion.
About the corn. That very quick. Up the tube, does it? Because I know corn comes out no matter what's going on.
Yes. So that was hilarious that you say that, Dale, because I'm in the hospital. And, of course, you know how bad hospital food is. And they brought me corn one day. And I looked at the nurse and I went, are you freaking kidding me, people? And I used to sit there and time my food to see how fast it will come. you learn to amuse yourself. So I actually named my ostomy Homer. Mine was, let's see, how did I come up with that name? It was an ileostomy, and the Iliad and the Odyssey was written by Homer. So okay. I named mine Homer. Yeah.
No.
And the doctor comes in one day. I'm getting ready to get discharged, and he's having this very somber conversation with me because so many people go through depression when they have to live in that ostomy bag, Mr. Bro, and you know he won't shut up. So see how I bleeped it out?
Yes,
so,
I did. I appreciate that. Yeah.
He won't shut up. And finally he goes, Mr. Bro, do you have any questions? And that's when I said, well, I named mine Homer because it's an ileostomy, not a colonoscopy. And the Iliad and the Odyssey was written by Homer, so I named mine Homer. How's that go for you? He goes, oh, Mr. Bro, I've wasted 90 minutes of your time discussing your future depression. You're going to be fine. You're gonna be fine. So I had the joy of living with that for 6 weeks. And then they open you back up and put your parts back together again. It's a great weight loss system. If you are really trying to keep the calories off, take 10 feet of your small intestines out and live without that. It's just a phenomenal way to not die and not ever absorb food again.
So tomorrow is Skinny Tuesday for you. Good on you.
<It is. laughs> I always thought the easiest way to lose 20 pounds was like to cut off an arm.
I've gone through all the options.
No, because that's not true, Dale. You and I have Alvin, our friend in National Speakers Association, who was born with no arms and eats with his feet. And I've sat next to Alvin numerous times for dinner. That man can smoke a cigar with one one foot and drink a beer with the other foot. And then he eats. We were at dinner one day. We were at a formal banquet one night. And I just looked at him and went, young man, get your feet off the table.
He's an amazing man. And, you know, I played the drums in school, and I was pretty good. And he plays the drums with his
kick ass.
It was amazing.
Yes.
But he can't play the drums and have a drink at the same time. Exactly. That's the only challenge.
But my question for you, Jared, is, you know, the fact that you couldn't burp is what triggered this whole event. Would a good fart have saved your life?
I would not have been able to fart. You lose your entire ability to fart and burp once those valves have died.
Oh, my good God, question. Living then.
Very I good can't question. Fart.
Haul me off if I can't break now, wind. That's my hobby.
Now the skill set has come back post-surgery.
Oh, good.
And, it's worse than ever. It's worse than ever. You don't want to know the medical background. It is not a pretty life to live this way with the parts missing. It's every day is an ugly day, literally and figuratively. But you know what? I ain't dead. I am still above ground, I still get to do this every year, and it's just, you know what I love about it, and anybody who's listening and watching ought to come down and do this. You guys all have an invitation from me, and, you know, you can be my friend if you write a check to pay the dues and buy the beads, because you're literally throwing your money away at strangers. I mean, when you say you're throwing your money away, the answer is, that is absolutely right, sir. You're throwing your money away. And people from all around the world come down to our little organization to join us with this. And we were having a discussion last night. I've got a new son-in-law, and my daughter was ragging him about his intoxication. And I'm saying, look, sweetie, men need 3 days just to be not responsible for anything. To just, there's no email, there's no texting, there's no obligation. You just get stupid and you take 3 days off mentally, physically. And even though you're taking 3 days off, you're also kind of erasing 3 years of your life in a 3 day period. So it goes by fast. It's furious. And I think everybody should do it every year. I've been doing this for 30 years. I mean, I more than 30 years. I just do it every year. You know, some kids want to be firemen and some want to grow up to be policemen. I always wanted to be the guy in the float because those guys always look like they were having so much fun. And we do.
And how long has it been since the surgery now?
That was 2004.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm at 16 years.
Wow.
Yeah, in fact, it was a leap year, I remember, because they did my first surgery on the 29th of February. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, because so they did surgery 2 days back.
So it's your fourth it'll be your fourth anniversary of the surgery.
No, but 16, 2004.
Yeah, but the 29th.
Yes, the 29th. Yes, thank you.
Anal about that stuff. Anyhow,
so to speak.
Well, we have.
Yeah, you know they say what doesn't kill you. Makes you stronger. So yeah, I'm that guy. I am that guy who lives life to the fullest, who is just all about the joie de vivre, the joy of life, which also happens to be, you know, the motto of my parade crew is joie de vivre, joy of life. So yeah, I'm the poster child for that.
That is fantastic. You know, this is one heck of a story we hear from a guy who devotes, you know, at least a week every year to enjoying life to the fullest, to the point where he almost didn't have that opportunity anymore, and now appreciates fully what this podcast is about, and that's having another day above ground. And
yeah, you're right.
Jared, we can't thank you enough for joining us. Good luck tomorrow in your endeavors to, you know, drink your personal weight in alcohol. And it's you know, New Orleans is a wonderful thing. I'd like to come down again for the parade. You know, I'm going to need probably crutches and stuff to get up there, but that's okay because it's a fun time.
We do a live broadcast from the parade next year.
Oh, there you go.
We can do that. We can do that. And by the way, big secret, tomorrow we're going to be costuming as we walk through the French Quarter. I will be the legendary anchorman Ron Burgundy. So when you lose this much weight, the leather jacket I bought in 1976 still fits me. So, you know. I believe I'm going to rock that look.
Do you know what San Diego means? I believe
it means a whale's vagina.
Whale's vagina, yes.
Yeah.
You're in character, buddy. You do well.
It's a punchy. Yeah.
It's a whale's punchy. There you go.
Historians claim the meaning was lost long ago.
Yes, I'm.
But
sure.
I also have many leather-bound books in my home. And, yeah, so we're going to go the whole route.
Excellent. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, Jared, thank you. We can't thank you enough for joining us. Carolyn, any last words to say before we wrap it up and go start enjoying Mardi Gras?
Yeah, I want everybody to enjoy their bonus day. Remember, this is the week of the bonus day. It only happens once every 4 years, so do something fabulous on the 29th and then write to us and tell us about it.
Celebrate Jared's surgery. That would be a good thing.
Hey, know what would be a great thing to do? Let's have everybody text me a credit card number, their expiration date, and the 3-digit code on the back. I will buy drinks for each of you who sends me a credit card number and celebrate Mardi Gras on your behalf with your charge card. And then I'll send you a picture of me buying whatever else I buy with your credit card. Hey, I do it for the kids. I do it because I love everybody on this podcast.
And where would they send that, Jared? How would they get a hold of you?
Just go to Jared Bro, go to brocommunications.com, B-R-A-U-D, email link, send me your credit card. I will buy booze with your money.
Cool. But remember, the D is silent when you pronounce it. Kind of like
it
the,
is. It
like
is. The P it's in for bed. The kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tim, right, anything?
Just check out my website, timslegel.com.
All right. And please go to daleirvin.com where you can sign up for the Friday Funnies, the video and readable, I guess would be the word, recap of the week's news. Thank you all. Thanks, Jared, for joining us. You're gonna hear this a couple of days after Mardi Gras, so take all these tips and store them for next year. But right now, we are heading out for pancakes and Bloody Marys because it is another day above ground.
And that's it for another day above ground. For Dale, Tim, and Carolyn, I'm Farad Muhammad. Thanks for listening.